changing command. Captain D.L. Mewborn replaced Captain Owen Honors, who was fired after lewd videos he produced and showed to his crew a few years ago recently surfaced. Mewborn says the crew didn't like the circumstances of the change in leadership, but is focused on the task at hand. The nuclear-powered Enterprise is being deployed to support troops in Afghanistan. Rescuers, armed with little more than shovels, are racing to find victims of yesterday's mudslide in Brazil. Local authorities believe at least 350 people were killed in three towns in the mountains north of Rio de Janeiro that were swept away by a torrent of mud, rock, and trees. Dozens of people remain missing. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines.
Financial journalist Felix Salmon says Wall Street is now ruled by algorithms, with computers not only crunching the data, but often making the decisions, creating a new market that is volatile and unpredictable, and often impossible for humans to comprehend. On the next Fresh Air, Salmon talks about high-speed trading, which he writes about in this month's Wired magazine. Join us.
Today at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
You're one of 170 million Americans who stay informed or get inspired.
One of 170 million Americans who use public media every month. That's more than half the country. Now public media needs your support.
Make sure the programming you need in your community stays in your community. Learn more about federal funding for public media at 170millionamericans.org.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. It's hour two of the show. I'm David Inge. Harriet Williamson is our producer. The following program comes from the Focus archive, so that means that for the next hour, we will not be taking your calls. The marriage of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt was on display for everyone to see. Yet there is much about their relationship that remains shrouded in mystery. Our guest for this hour, author Hazel Rowley, says that even though the Roosevelts were the most famous couple of their time, they managed to maintain their unorthodox private lives, keeping major details hidden from the public and sometimes from each other. This morning, in this hour of Focus, we will explore this unusual partnership as we talk with Hazel Rowley about her recent book. The title is Franklin and Eleanor, An Extraordinary Marriage, and it's published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. The book is out now, and it's quite an interesting story. You might want to seek it out in the library or the bookstore. And as we talk here this morning, questions are welcome. We hope people can try and be brief and be on topic, so that'll help us accommodate as many different callers as possible. But certainly people who are listening may call. They're welcome to call. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. In addition, if you'd like to send along your questions by email, you can do that by writing to will-talk, that's just like it sounds, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. So at any point here, questions are certainly welcome. And Ms. Rowley, hello.
Hello, David.
Well, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.
I certainly think that you have to start out just by acknowledging that, say, at least over the past 100 years, that there has been no political couple in America with the kind of significance and influence that the Roosevelts had.
Definitely, that's true. And I suppose it's not only because Eleanor forged for herself an extraordinary position as First Lady, but also the fact, of course, that while they were in the White House, America, the world, in fact, was suffering from the Great Depression and then the Second World War. So the whole world looked to the Roosevelts. I mean, in Australia, in South America, in France, people wept when FDR died. He was the hero of the Allies.
And I think also you would make the argument that neither of them would have been able to achieve what they achieved without the other.
Definitely not. The fact that Franklin came down with that dreaded disease, infantile paralysis, in other words, polio, when he was 39, and became a paraplegic, unable to stand, let alone walk, without braces. I mean, he couldn't walk. He had to fake his walk. Was certainly he owed his presidency, I'd say, to a large degree to Eleanor, and the fact that Eleanor, who was an orphan at the age of 10 and always felt like an ugly duckling, she was 5'11", gawky, not particularly beautiful. I think she was beautiful in her way, but not like aristocratic women were meant to be. And the fact that she came from the most prominent Republican family in America, the family of Theodore Roosevelt. He was her father's brother. And she became the most outspoken, courageous, progressive, democratic first lady this country's ever known. What a transformation. And certainly she couldn't have done it without Franklin.
Yeah. And when you read, as you have in the book, you read the accounts of what he was going through and what the family was going through immediately after he contracted polio, and how crushingly difficult that must have been. It's remarkable that he had the personal courage not to simply give up, but that she continued also to stand by him through what I'm sure was the most difficult time of their lives.
Harrowing, absolutely harrowing. I spend a whole chapter 4, the summer at Campo Bello, 1921, when he came down with this awful paralysis disease, and there was no helicopter back then to come to the island. There was no bridge to the island of Campo Bello. It took 2 weeks before an infantile specialist could come from Boston and confirm their worst fears. But yes, he went from being a tremendously restless, physical, athletic man to becoming a man who couldn't move, and it was a catastrophe of immense proportions. He thought his political dreams were crushed, and it was Eleanor, very much with the help of their mutual friend Louis Howe, a tremendously courageous man and interesting friend who's an important character in my story. It was with Eleanor's help, I think, his doctors said so later, that Franklin found his self again. She pushed him, she encouraged him. She knew that it would destroy his spirit to become a man in a wheelchair sitting at Hyde Park on the south porch, which is what his mother wanted for him.
Yeah. Will, I'm sure in the course of our conversation we'll talk more about their relationship, how it changed over time, about the interest that remains on whatever outside relationships the two of them had. But just to save that for a bit, to me it seems remarkable, even for that time, which didn't quite have the mass media that we have now, that for a couple that lived their life, that had public lives, that they lived their life in the public eye, that they also should have managed to have the level of privacy that they did, to the extent that there are still significant questions about how they lived their lives that people have that we really don't have answers for.
Yes, it's extraordinary. I quite agree. There was no presidential couple that was more in the public eye. And even before don't forget that they were in the White House for 12 years. No president has ever had 4 terms. Later on, the law was changed so that a president can't do that. But because of the war, FDR was elected a 4th term. He died, of course, at the beginning of it. And before the White House, they were 4 years in the governor's house in Albany, because he was governor of New York and she was the governor's wife. And even in their marriage, 1905, it was Theodore Roosevelt, who happened to be the president of the country, who gave Eleanor away because her father was dead. So they were, yes, they were always in the public eye. And what's astounding is how they managed to live this extremely unconventional life and sort of get away with it.
Yeah. Our guest this morning in this hour, Hazel Rowley. She is the author of the book Franklin and Eleanor, An Extraordinary Marriage, about the marriage of the Roosevelts, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. It's published by Ferris Draugiroux. It's out now. Questions, welcome, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Going back to Franklin and his interest in Eleanor as a partner, as a potential partner, Franklin was, as a young man, he was quite handsome. He was charming. He was charismatic. He was certainly high-born, and you would think that he would have had some range of choice for a wife. Eleanor, as you say, is not conventionally beautiful, although when you see these pictures of her when she's a girl, I think I would say she's pretty cute. But there's something there. So you wonder, well, what it was that Franklin saw in her, because it seems fairly early on he said, okay, this is the one, and moved fairly quickly toward marriage, even though I think his mother was not all that happy with Eleanor as a wife for Franklin.
Yes, exactly. They did, of course, know each other since their childhood. They were both Roosevelts, right? Eleanor didn't change her name. They were fifth cousins once removed, and they saw each other from time to time in their childhood. But Eleanor was always a sort of gawky, shy, rather awkward cousin who everybody felt sorry for because she was orphaned and looked after by her grandmother. And then she went for 3 years to finishing school, it was really, in England, run by a very progressive lesbian headmistress. And Eleanor became the sort of heroine of the school. Everybody loved her. She really became more confident there. And by the way, aristocracy in Europe was a lot less straight-laced than the aristocracy in New York. She felt much freer. And she also had her first glimpse of really progressive ideas. And my book starts with Franklin bumping into her on a train ride up the Hudson. They didn't know they were on the same train, and they talk. And it's really the beginning of Franklin's new interest in Eleanor. She always had beautiful, gentle blue eyes, and she had beautiful hair, long, fair hair, and had something very intelligent in those eyes. But I think on that train trip, because he started courting her seriously the following winter, he saw something in her. Franklin had a sixth sense about people. He was very good later on as president at choosing his team. I think he had a sense about Eleanor. She was caring. She cared for the world. She was very encouraging and supportive. She was gentle. And he really stood up to his mother big time, which was rare for Franklin. His mother wanted a beautiful young socialite for him. And as you say, Franklin could have got anybody. But he stood up to his mother. He said, you know, this is the woman I want. I've been in love with her for a long time. I find myself the luckiest man alive. Voila tout, he said in French to his mother. That's it.
And it's so you say in the book that when they were married in 1905, and even though this marriage did indeed change over time, you say initially what we have here is a conventional Victorian era marriage. At the same time, you think that maybe Franklin saw in Eleanor the potential for her to become the person that she did eventually?
Well, he probably didn't have that amount of foresight, but he knew, I think, that she was very open to the world and supportive, and she loved people just like he did. And she was supportive of his career. And in fact, as I show in the book, she was just amazingly supportive of his career. And their very first step away from convention, I guess, because it started off with Franklin being a lawyer, she having four babies in 5.5 years. She never particularly liked motherhood. But their first step away from tradition was 5 years into the marriage in 1910, when Franklin stood for the state senate in the Hudson Valley area where he grew up, which was absolutely farmland Republican. He was 28. Nobody thought he'd had a hope of winning, and he won. And they moved to Albany for 3 years, which is where they met Louis Howe and where Eleanor became interested in politics. But what I'm saying, what was so different is, as we know, traditionally, aristocrats, the American aristocracy, are Republicans. Theodore Roosevelt was a Republican president. Of course, he was very progressive, but Republican nevertheless. And Franklin, now that Theodore was no longer the president, stood as a Democrat. And many of their friends and all of the Roosevelt family felt that he was being a traitor to his class. But Eleanor stood by his side, and she herself, women couldn't vote at that time, remember. Women couldn't vote till 1920, and this was 1910. But Eleanor proudly stood by his side and became more and more democratic in her own thinking. And, you know, that was the beginning of it all, I would say, the beginning of an unconventional marriage.
Yeah. As you, as you've mentioned, when they were married in 1905, her father was dead. And so the man who had the role of escorting, walking her down the aisle was her uncle Teddy, who just happened to be president of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. He was, so not only was T.R. Eleanor's uncle. He was also FDR's cousin.
Yes.
And this was a big deal. This was front page news.
Yes.
And certainly T.R. was a man who did not shy away from the spotlight. Is there a quote in here that someone said something like, you know, he was the bride at any wedding that he was at, or something to that extent. So this was a very big deal. Do you think that Franklin was influenced in his choice, that his interest in Eleanor had something to do with the fact that her uncle was president of the United States?
I do think it had something to do with it. I don't think he was that calculating, because, you know, the early photos of them all, the early photos of them as a couple really convinced me that they were very much in love. They're very playful, affectionate photos. But certainly Franklin admired Theodore Roosevelt inordinately, because he really was a progressive Republican who believed in curtailing finances, you know, big business, and he was wanting to bring in anti-lynching laws. He was in favor of women's suffrage, and I think that Franklin really rather dreamed, even back then at the age of 18, 19, 20, Franklin dreamed of following his cousin Theodore's footsteps and becoming president himself. And Eleanor was closer to the White House, to her uncle, than he was. So that was certainly part of her attraction. But I'd only say part of it.
Mm-hmm. They had, what, five children?
Well, six, actually, but one died. Okay. One son died at 10 months. So they had five, yes.
And it sounds as if for her, motherhood was difficult.
Yes.
I think that there are some people who make this assumption that after that, that the last child was born, the reason they didn't have any more was that they weren't having relations anymore, and that people seem to attach some significance to that and say that that says something about their relationship. That's something that you seem to think, of course, nobody really knows, but the fact that they stopped having children, you say that doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't having relations.
I absolutely do say that. I mean, nobody writes in their diary that they stopped having sex, you know, and I doubt it very much, because by the time they'd had their six children, they were in their mid-30s, and Eleanor was extremely unassertive. She was very much in her mother-in-law's shadow, doing everything she could to please Franklin and help him in his career. To have said to him, a man in his mid-30s, that's it for you, you know, you're sleeping in another bed, no more sex, I absolutely don't think she would have said that.
Mm. Just to go back here to talk a little bit about the influence of Franklin's mother in their lives, this certainly would have been a challenge for both of them. When they were newlyweds, they lived with his mother.
Yes, she gave them, that very first year they were married, she gave them a Christmas present, which was, she said to them, I'll get a house built for you. And she did on East 65th Street in Manhattan. The catch to that particular present was that it was a double twin house, and she lived in half of it. And there were several connecting doors, and she kept bustling through them. So that those early years definitely were difficult for Eleanor. She felt she didn't have a real house of her own. They were also servants, don't forget, so they had really no privacy. And the deal was that they had to please his mother, because his mother gave them handouts of money and never gave Franklin more, even when he was president of the United States. She never increased his trust fund or anything. She was so rich, but she only ever gave him handouts, and he needed them, you know. He had expensive political campaigns. He had six children. After polio, he needed attendance. He needed some money. And so being nice to Mama was in it all through their lives. And she died only 3 years before Franklin. So he never really saw the money that he might have seen, given that he'd had a very rich father.
Mm-hmm. And there is apparently a story. It's said that she was actually not all that excited about his being elected president. She was very reluctant, to say the least, to be the first lady. She didn't want that. At least that's something that some people say. I think you challenged that. Was she all along, interested in, supportive of his involvement in politics?
Absolutely. frankly, this is one of the most silly myths out there. And it's very pervasive, even in books that, you know, come out today. Or there was a recent article in The New Yorker that said she was one of the most reluctant first ladies ever. The fact was that she said that, that's true. She wrote the first two volumes of her autobiography when she was in the White House. And 80% of the press back then was Republican, Hearst Press, William Randolph Hearst. And what the press brutally said from day one was that they accused Franklin of petticoat government and saying things like, you know, Eleanor wore the trousers and Eleanor was hell-bent on the White House and from the day she married him and so on and so on. Of course, you know, you can imagine the caricatures. She had to say, as an intelligent first lady who was extremely interested in politics and certainly influenced politics in America, she had to say that she wasn't interested and she never wanted to enter the White House. But we don't have to be stupid enough to believe her. Mm-hmm. I mean, any autobiography you have to read between the lines, and particularly the autobiographies of politicians.
We have a caller here to bring into our conversation. Let's do that. Someone in Urbana on, I believe, our line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was wondering whether or not the fact that media conditions were different at that time compared to, like, today plays into the fact that maybe, I don't know if it was so sensationalized as it would be today. Could you address that?
Yes, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Even though the press was majority Republican, in other words, anti-Roosevelt, and certainly Franklin and Eleanor put up with tremendous hatred from people, nevertheless, the cameramen lowered their cameras when Franklin was lifted into a car and lifted out of a car. There was a sort of gentleman's understanding. Gentlemen, because the press was entirely male back then, gentlemen's understanding that this was a dignified thing to do with a handicapped man. Don't forget this was before television. Television really came in after Franklin died. He died in 1945. It came in really in the early 50s. There were newsreels, but they were very carefully orchestrated and censored by FDR's press secretary, Stephen Early. You know, we almost have no footage of him walking. I saw once a bit of footage of him walking to the Rhinebeck Public Library, and even for me, who had read all about how difficult it was for him to walk, I found myself wincing. It was agonizingly slow and difficult. There are three photos in existence of him in a wheelchair. So his press secretary was extraordinarily good at controlling the image, And yes, it wouldn't be possible today, would it?
Do you think that there was any factor that because Eleanor was a woman, and I know she got attention, but maybe she got less attention because she was female?
No, she got lots of attention. She gave press conferences once a week. She gave them to women reporters, insisting that she wanted to help women in journalism, and so she refused men because she wanted to give the women a chance. But she also had this column called My Day, which was syndicated indeed in many, many Republican newspapers too. They read Eleanor Roosevelt every single day. So I mean, she got enormous attention.
Well, she was a remarkable woman, obviously.
Really.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. We are just about at the midway through this hour of Focus. And let me again introduce the guest, Hazel Rowley. She is the author of the book Franklin and Eleanor, An Extraordinary Marriage. It is the first book, really, to look at this relationship in a number of decades. It's just recently come out. It's published by Farrar, Straus, Giroux. And questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, a toll-free 800-222-9455. Maybe it would be appropriate at this point for me to ask you, as people will hear from your accent, that you were not born in the United States,
right.
So you're not an American, why it is that you became so interested in this most famous of American couples?
Well, you're right. I was actually born in England, and then my family went to Australia when I was 10, so I've got a kind of mixed accent. But I now live in New York, and I've lived in the States for the last 14 years. Mm. And I have even written about the African-American writer Richard Wright, mm-hmm. which is even more astounding, really, because until I wrote that book, I knew very little about, you know, what it meant to be a black man in America. But there's nothing like writing a book to find out. I admire the Roosevelts. Everybody I've ever written about, including Richard Wright, hugely admired the Roosevelts. And it was really going up to the wonderful FDR Museum in the Hudson Valley one day shortly after I moved to New York. And you have to go on a guided tour of the house, and everybody was asking the guide questions about the relationship. And it was when one person asked, you know, what's the best book on the subject, and he said it was 40 Years Old, the book by Joseph Lash, that I first got the idea of writing about this wonderful couple, because they intrigued me. And you know, the image that's out there about the Roosevelts is really rather negative. Even though they're both seen as two wonderful characters, most people think that the marriage was a kind of public facade. Mm. And I was open to this. I was open to what I was going to find. But what I did find, after, you know, years of immersing myself in documents and various oral interviews and memoirs and so on, was a marriage of tremendous generosity and love. They did choose to relax apart, but is that the sign of a bad marriage? You know, Eleanor was busy. She loved to be busy. Franklin, burdened by the war, burdened by polio. He liked his cocktails. Eleanor, who came from a family of alcoholics, her father died of alcoholism, her younger brother died of alcoholism. She really didn't particularly like cocktails. She could never slow down. Franklin needed to slow down. So they spent time apart, but their marriage was glued together by an absolute passion for politics. Mm. Politics in the best sense, by the way, I think, which means public service. They both really wanted to change the world. They wanted to make things better.
There were, in his life, in addition to Eleanor, there were two, at least, women who were very important, with whom he had a very close relationship. The exact nature of the relationship may be somewhat open to question, but two women that he was very close to, obviously. And the first of those was Lucy Mercer, who was actually hired to be a secretary, social secretary for Eleanor. And this was in the 19-teens when they'd gone to Washington, and he became the secretary of the Navy. Let's just talk about Lucy Mercer and who she was.
Yes, well, you're quite right. She was employed as Eleanor's social secretary to help Franklin. I mean, Eleanor did numerous social calls and entertaining. She who was so easily seasick was always there with him on inspection tours of all these boats. But and then behind her back, a year before the proof came, she suspected it. But it was when Franklin came back from the front. He went on a boat to Europe in 1918 at the end of the war and came back with double pneumonia and was carried off the ship in a stretcher. Eleanor unpacked his suitcase, and she discovered a trove of love letters from her secretary, Lucy Mercer. At that time, Franklin didn't have polio. He was a gorgeous-looking man. And we do not know whether that relationship was consummated or not. I can assure you that I'm nothing of a prude, but I do give reasons for thinking that it quite possibly wasn't. But in any event, it was a hell of a betrayal for Eleanor and a very difficult moment in the marriage. But whereas everybody so many people like to say that it was a turning point in their marriage from which there was no return, I again say the opposite. The letters afterwards between Franklin and Eleanor were very close. She called him dearest honey. He called her dearest Babs. It was a difficult moment, but they had difficult moments in their marriage. The worst, of course, was polio. And they overcame these moments and became more bold and more radical. And that's exactly my point. Mm. I actually think Lucy has been a little bit exaggerated, because she happened to be with Franklin when he died at Warm Springs. She was in the group of adoring women and adoring men. I mean, everybody adored Franklin. And he'd gone down to Warm Springs to relax. And it just happened that the day he died was one of the 3 days that Lucy was with the group. Mm-hmm. And so people have built that up as being, you know, Lucy Mercer, the love of his life, who was with him at his death. Well, come on, you know, Eleanor was back in Washington being very busy, and it was more or less a coincidence that Lucy was there then. But Eleanor was faced, she had to fly down to Warm Springs, and she was faced not only with the dead body of her husband, but also was told that Lucy had been there. And that was a bad betrayal for her.
Well, what you suggest that when in thinking about this question, well, what exactly was this is sometimes described as an affair, and sometimes that's even put in quotes because we're not exactly sure, you know, what constituted the nature of this affair. And I think you make the argument that, in fact, that because, again, they were living very public lives, it was not as if they could run off to a hotel to be together or could sneak off anywhere to be together. So
in those days, you needed to sort of to check in with your married names and so on. It would have been tawdry and difficult and probably below Franklin's dignity, and not to mention hers.
Yeah. But that also, you also start thinking about if indeed this was if they were in love, if this was a very close, intimate relationship that included everything except having sex, that kind of emotional betrayal could have been felt, the kind of emotional betrayal that no doubt Eleanor felt, that was probably as bad as it would have been if they had been having sex.
Yes, exactly, obviously. And not only the worst, perhaps, was that other people knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Franklin had been going around Washington rather openly, driving his car with Lucy on those hot summer Washington evenings, taking her down the Virginia back roads and probably stopping for a passionate necking session. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people saw him while Eleanor and the children were up on Campo Bello. You know, she had to be up with the kids away from the Washington heat. So that was hard. She felt betrayed because other people knew what she didn't know.
And this goes back to the earlier question about just how much what people knew or what they thought they knew or what people talked about. If you look at that, or if, for example, you look at what seems to have been a very close, and again, we don't know exactly the nature of it, but a very close relationship between Eleanor and a man who was her bodyguard. You start wondering, well, what really did people think was going on? Maybe quite apart from what was really going on, what did people think was going on in both of these cases?
Well, the tongues were wagging, that's for sure, but nobody really knew. Even Sam Rosenman, who was FDR's speechwriter, moved into the governor's mansion in Albany with his wife, and he said, you know, Dorothy and I wondered often about FDR and his secretary, Missy LaHand, but nobody knew. We saw how close they were, but nobody knew. By that time, you see, Franklin had had polio, and polio opened up the marriage into a community. It really did. Lucy's one thing. That was a betrayal. That was before he got polio. Now the man, after 1921, he needs attendants around him and so on. So his secretary, Missy, Marguerite was her real name. The Roosevelts all called her Missy. She went down south with Franklin a lot, and was probably definitely more than his secretary. She was definitely fiercely in love with Franklin. But, you know, she was a quiet, smiling woman who had the patience to sit there fishing with him and had the patience to put up with the mosquitoes in the south and paste stamps into his stamp album and so on. So she was good at that job, and Eleanor was good at her job back in New York, being a major figure in the Democratic Party when women now had the vote. The governor, the bodyguard, was in the governor's mansion. That was 1928 to 1932. Eleanor, Franklin told her she had to have a chauffeur. She refused. So he said, okay, if you won't have a chauffeur, you've at least got to have a bodyguard. So he gave her, attributed to her, the rather handsome young man, state trooper, called Earl Miller. And the two of them went around together, just alone, in cars, doing inspection tours of New York, while Franklin, who was paralyzed, couldn't do that. And Earl Miller was, I would say they were a bit in love, these two, but definitely this was not a consummated affair. That's a crazy idea. He was her bodyguard. He had huge respect for the governor's wife. But he was devoted to her, and she liked being escorted by this gallant man. And And he told her one thing which was extremely useful. She was very camera shy. She knew she had a rather difficult jawline. And he said, you know, Eleanor, you're beautiful. He called him Lady, not Eleanor. You know, Lady, you're beautiful when you smile. Mm. And he taught her to smile in front of the cameras. He was also politically, you know, progressive Democrat. And all the people in their community who they loved were all sort of part of the Roosevelt Project, making it possible.
Yeah, that's it. Certainly, in his case, it seemed like he liked the company of women. He liked women, and for him, that in some sense he needed, wanted to have some female company, the company of women who would not place the kind of demands on him that Eleanor did. Yeah. Not that he ran from those, and I'm sure that on some level. That was very exciting for him, but I suppose ultimately it goes to the idea that people are complicated and they have complex needs, and maybe one should wonder whether one person really can meet all of those needs.
Yes, I agree with your points. I think that marriage is more complicated, and particularly marriage when polio enters the scene, and particularly marriage in the White House. And particularly marriage in the White House when World War II is raging, you know.
Yeah.
This meant that Franklin had no time. He spent a lot of time with his secretary, you know, writing correspondence, writing talks and so on. She, Missy, was with him more than Eleanor. And Eleanor had her own friends who, for example, her lesbian friend, definitely. There was a romance with Lorena Hickok, the most prominent female political journalist in the country. Just as Eleanor was entering the White House, was the height of their passion for each other. On inauguration night, Lorena Hickok was there on inauguration night, but the next night she had to go back to New York, and Eleanor writes her a love letter. And, you know, we have, these letters have survived. But again, okay, we can say fancy Eleanor distracting herself with a lesbian affair, or we could look at what this was, which was a relationship with a very strong, opinionated, interesting, democratic journalist who was soon reporting on conditions in depressed America to Eleanor and writing to her things like, I read that you wore a velvet dress today in the newspapers. Nobody should be wearing a velvet dress these days when 20,000 Baltimore children can't go to school because they have no clothing. So, I mean, she was telling off the First Lady. You know, these were the things that these friends did for the Roosevelts, and the Roosevelts did a great deal for the friends. And I sort of feel hurt when people portray it as if the Roosevelts were busy sort of bopping into bed with people, you know, to distract themselves, because it was far from the truth. This was a community of political soulmates who made it possible for them to do what they did.
We have some other callers here. Why don't we talk with them? And just maybe also I will quickly introduce again the guest, Hazel Rowley. She's the author of a new book, Franklin and Eleanor, An Extraordinary Marriage, published by Ferris, Strauss, and Giroux. And we have about 12, 13 minutes left in this part of the show. We have a couple of callers. We'll talk with them. First is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. If I may hark back to an earlier part of your talk, I don't find that Teddy Roosevelt, being a liberal and a progressive, was particularly surprising at that time. The Republican Party had, after all, been the liberal party from Lincoln's time until the early 1920s or the early 1900s, while the Democratic Party was the conservative party. It was only after 1900 that the Democrats began to have a few progressives. The other great progressive of that time of Teddy Roosevelt was Robert La Follette of Wisconsin, who was also a Republican. They happen not to have liked one another very much, but they were the two great progressive liberals of the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And until Nixon's Southern strategy, the Republican Party retained a strong liberal faction.
Mm. Yes, I'm glad you made that point, because it's true. Teddy Roosevelt saw himself as a Lincoln Republican, and he believed in, he had a strong moral ethic about doing things for the common man, you know. He talked about a square deal. Franklin would later talk about a new deal. But that's very true what you say about Republicans. It's very different from the virulent Republicans we see today who don't have those values at all.
There's been a complete reversal of party polarity.
Yes.
But I'm very much enjoying your talk, and I hope you go on where you... I interrupted you.
Well, thank you. No, thank you made an important point. Thank you.
All right. And another caller here. This is Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I'm wondering if, well, maybe ask it as a question. At in the era when the Roosevelts were younger, was fidelity a common factor in marriages in the upper class to which they belonged?
Good question. I suspect that Franklin would not have been the first very good-looking aristocratic male in Washington who, you know, had a romance while his wife was away with the children. That's what, let's say that's what men did. I think what Eleanor did was somewhat more surprising. To have a romance, a lesbian romance, just as she was entering the White House. And Franklin, by the way, was completely tolerant of it. I mean, Lorena Hickok was often at dinner in the White House, and Franklin liked Eleanor's friends. She mostly liked his, so that's why I call it a community. But no, that's a good question, and I think that in some ways those times were more... I won't say more progressive, but let's say less puritanical than we are today.
And you would agree, of course, that Franklin Roosevelt was not the first American president who had interests outside of his marriage.
Oh, exactly.
Maybe it's part of their job description. Thank you.
Well, they're very charismatic men, you know, by definition, if they become politicians, aren't they? Mm. And they like to be worshipped. And don't forget that Franklin was doted on by his mother. He grew up as the golden boy. He was so good-looking that the newspapers in his 30s always commented on him. I mean, they compared him with a movie star. And so, yes, it's not really surprising.
Yeah. There, although I think that it's true that perhaps some of Franklin's interest in marrying and maybe even marrying someone like Eleanor had maybe at least a little bit to do with the fact that there had been a big scandal in the Roosevelt family involving somebody marrying a chorus girl. So perhaps he felt that he needed to be married, that if he was going to have sex with anybody, it had to be somebody he was married to. And maybe also he was concerned with having marrying someone who appeared to be someone very, you know, solid and serious, of good character, someone unimpeachable, someone that, even though, as we said, maybe his mother was not completely happy with Eleanor, at least she was the right kind of person for him to be marrying.
Yes, exactly. No, you've read this book very well, I must say. There was a scandal in the Roosevelt family, which blotted the name, and I mean, a Roosevelt man does not go off and marry a chorus girl from the Tenderloin district, and this is what had happened. And I think that Franklin, there is an episode earlier on where he's courting another very young woman before Eleanor. He was 20, the young woman was 17, and obviously they were a little scared that they had got her pregnant. And I think all that had happened was some petting, to use that old-fashioned word, but back then people were afraid that a kiss made you pregnant. And there's no doubt that Franklin felt that he had to be married in order to have sex, and he was a physical, libidinal young man, so get married as soon as possible, I think. Because, I mean, the other alternative for aristocratic men was to indeed go down and visit the Tenderloin district, but I don't think, because of the scandal, Franklin was not going to do that.
We talked about, you talked about your feeling, and I think there's a good reason to say that it's right, that the two of them, that she could never have had the kind of impact on American society and politics that she did had she not been married to Franklin, that perhaps he never would have been able to come back after having polio without her. So in a lot of ways, where it is they ended up, what it is they managed to do, the fact that we think of them as being maybe the most powerful political couple ever in America, at least in the last century, all of that had to do with the other, with each other. So having said that, do you think that are there some particular policies, things that happened during the Roosevelt administration, during the 12 years that he was president, that you can really attribute to Eleanor?
Not entirely, you know. The public myth is that Eleanor was far to the left of Franklin and pushed him. And what I found was lots of letters where he would say to her, this is how I suggest you do it. Try and get this person on side and that person on side. You can do it. Unfortunately, I can't at the moment, because he was, you know, up against the Southern Democrats who were conservative and racist, and Eleanor could be the sort of trial balloon. And he was brave enough to give her that rein. He gave her that rope and allowed her to be, because there were plenty of people around Franklin who wanted his wife to shut up. But so I think Franklin was very bold. And I think that Franklin himself would have loved to bring in anti-lynching legislation. They both tried to bring in 20,000 Jewish kids into America outside the immigration quota during the early years of, in 1939. He told Eleanor how to go about it, but the legislation failed. Sometimes Franklin is accused of not doing more for Jews, but what I found after a lot of reading was really that what he was up against again was Southern Democrats, but also, you know, the whole of America, like the whole of the world back then, was pretty anti-Semitic. Somebody made the comment that 20,000 sweet little Jewish kids would grow up into 20,000 ugly adults, and the legislation was never passed. But what I found was letter after letter where he said to Eleanor, go ahead, say that in my day, her column, in other words. I unfortunately can't.
Back near the beginning of the program, I think I made the comment that here in your writing about the relationship, you write about the fact that here at the beginning, again, we should acknowledge the fact that when they were married, it was 1905. And you say that this was a fairly typical Victorian era marriage. And it's true that that would only have been a couple of years after the passing of Victoria. And it was at the time that they were married, women couldn't even vote. So they wouldn't have the opportunity to participate in politics in the way that Eleanor later would. So that in many ways, initially, that it was a marriage very much of its time and of their class, that then changes over time and becomes, again, what you call, I think the words you use are one of the most interesting and radical in history.
Yes.
And I'm just interested to hear, as we come down to our last four or five minutes, to talk a little bit about the nature of that change and how it is that change was possible.
Right. I think polio made them radical. Mm. It made them bold. Mm. They realized that if they were going to survive this horrific catastrophe, they had to think boldly. They had to open up possibilities. They had to have close friends to help them. And so, for example, Franklin had the idea of warm springs. Not only did he go down to this place in Georgia, which had a warm spring where he liked to swim, but he very quickly invested two-thirds of his money in setting it up as a radical new place for polios, as they call themselves. And, you know, instead of a grim institution, this would be a place where they could come and swim and do exercises and have the best possible polio specialists. But in between, they could be a community with a nice dinner and sitting out on the porches together and encouraging each other. And it became one of the most, the best polio center in America. He had the idea for Eleanor that she should build a little house not far away from Mama's house at Hyde Park, and this was Val Kill. Mm-hmm. Franklin actually designed this gorgeous little cottage that you can see today, and that she should move in with her two lesbian friends, who were a couple, And Franklin thought this was very funny. He called it Honeymoon Cottage. But his idea was that while he was in the South, while he was away a lot trying to get, you know, trying to find himself again with polio, Eleanor shouldn't have to live in his mother's house or in the twin house with Mama, but that she should have a place where she could live with her progressive friends, many of whom, by the way, coincidentally perhaps, were lesbians. So they always thought boldly, and that developed more and more during the presidency, during the marriage, after polio. I'd say halfway through the marriage, it really changed.
I wonder, thinking about people of their class, when people got married, this was not necessarily a love match. That in some cases, this was more of a merger. And whether, in fact, it wouldn't be such an unusual idea that you would, to satisfy your various needs, and I'm not just talking about sexual needs, that it was necessary and it was even understood that you would go outside of your marriage. And that this sort of bohemian direction that they took things, and that may be the wrong kind of term, but was maybe not all that radical for people of their class.
I think it was because it wasn't just the man sneaking off. I mean, Franklin had done that once with Lucy Mercer, but this really was, he had the generosity to allow her to have these very strong, tender, affectionate attachments to men and to a woman. Not too many men allow their wives to do these things. And I do think it began as a love marriage and ended as a love marriage, but they just opened it up. And let's not get the wrong idea. After polio, Franklin was not having a wild sexual time. I think it's possible and even probable that when he went down south, for those 7 years after polio, he actually spent more time away from home than at home. I mean, the situation at home, as you can imagine, was terribly difficult. His polio and the household tensions and the things this had, I mean, Mama's disappointment and Eleanor pushing and the children being distraught. So he went down south with his secretary, and I imagine they had some sort of physical relationship. I really rather hope they did, because, you know, what Franklin was up against was finding his sense of manhood again. Mm-hmm. And Eleanor understood this. She and Missy were very close to each other. Missy writes her a Christmas card at one point saying, "Eleanor, you have no idea how much I love you." I think she always felt very grateful to Eleanor for giving her this time with her beloved FD, as she called him.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story, and I would certainly recommend it to people if you want to read more about this extraordinary marriage. That's the subtitle of the book, Franklin and Eleanor, by our guest Hazel Rowley. It's published by Farrah Straus Giroux. As she mentioned a little earlier, she has written about Richard Wright. Also, you wrote about Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre, another interesting couple.
They really did have a rather tempestuous sexual, with other people, yeah.
All right. And Ms. Rowley, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David. You read the book very well, I must say.
You've been listening to a program from the Focus Archives. Much of our local production, including past interviews from Focus and local news features, is available on our website anytime that you're ready to listen. Just go to will.illinois.edu. I'm David Inge. Thanks for tuning in.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Planned Parenthood of Illinois, where a current challenge grant for expansion of the Champaign Health Center is now in progress. More information is at ppil.org/Champaign or at 217-359-9616. WILL programming is made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn works with family and friends to create a plan to support residents' health and independence and provide them with a sense of belonging. More information is available at 384-0100.
It's a minute before 12 noon. I'm Tom Rogers with a look at the commodity markets. Another day of gains, even after yesterday's very large gains in the corn and bean markets. Winter wheat for March in Kansas City is currently up 13.5 cents at 865.5. March wheat in Chicago up 12 cents a bushel at 782.5. The May up 12 at 810.25. March corn is at 644 a bushel right now, up another 13 cents. The May at 652.5, up 12.75. July 657.5, up 13.25. February crude oil, by the way, is down 8 cents a barrel at $91.79. In the bean complex, January soybeans are at $14.19 and a quarter. That's up 10 and a quarter cents. March at $14.25 and a half, up 10 and a half. May at $14.35, up 11 and a quarter. Bean meal for January up $3.10 at $3.80.50. And January bean oil, $57.54, up 11.